Welcome to this week's edition of Far West Texas. Readings from the Big Bend Sentinel, the Monahans News, and the Fort Stockton Pioneer, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Big Bend Sentinel for Thursday, May 9th, 2024. Water woes continue for Candelaria as county mulls collaboration between districts. By Rob D'Amico. Rob at BigBendSentinel.com. Presidio County. Faced with continuing environmental violations and fines and no one to run its water district, Candelaria was the focus of a discussion at Wednesday's Presidio County Commissioners Court. Again, as commissioners explored options for assistance to local communities trying to provide their own water supply. The issue is ensuring water supply corporations in Redford, Ruidosa, and Candelaria can do required well testing, manage any contamination problems, and effectively collect bill revenue from their customers. Shafter and Las Pampas may be part of that equation as well, as they are in the planning stages of developing water systems funded by state grants. County Judge Joe Portillo told the Big Bend Sentinel that Candelaria Water Supply, already under a boil water notice and facing financial sanctions for more than $5,000 from the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality, TCEQ, also saw the loss of a longtime operator who handled billing and other administrative duties as well as turning on a pump every day. The Redford manager is also indicating he no longer can handle the duties, he said. Shafter, which relies on water from a well at the former mine to the west of Highway 67, has been under a boil water notice for some 2 years. They are struggling to maintain their water systems, Portillo said, finding someone to step up, especially with the requirements that TCEQ has on water operations and their systems and testing. It's very hard to do, and it's going to get even harder unless we come up with a countywide solution. Portillo said Tony Manriquez of Presidio and Shafter, who formerly tested the well there, has offered to negotiate a contract with the county to provide testing at all the community wells. That idea, getting the corporations to chip in and pay one person for testing, is appealing for systems that are facing no testing, but the rub is deciding who will step up and get that contract going. One option would be the new Presidio County Water Conservation and Improvement District, WCID, formed last fall to meet a requirement for state grant money administration for water systems in Shafter and Las Pampas and improvements in Marfa and Presidio. The board managing the WCID is officially called the Presidio County Utility System Board. Currently, that board is made up of the county judge and commissioners, but Portillo has said the plan has always been to have one board member from each local supply corporation serve on the WCID board. The district could then do the legwork needed to contract for services paid for by revenue from the combined systems. In Commissioner's Court Wednesday, there was some contention about which entity should spearhead fixes for the small water systems, with County Attorney Rod Ponton saying that, on the advice of environmental attorneys he's spoken with, it should be another new water conservation district formed by a petition from landowners. Presidio County Underground Water Conservation District Manager Trey Gerfers disagreed and said the existing utilities board managing grants can do the work. Precinct 4 Commissioner David Beebe said one thing was clear. The Commissioner's Court isn't the entity to address the problems and recommended scheduling a WCID board meeting to discuss the matter separately. Commissioner David Beebe has long been against any official county involvement in the local district operations. Candelaria's water system has been around for quite some time, and even when they were functioning properly, they don't build themselves enough to build any reserves for maintenance costs, he told the Sentinel. So periodically, their system goes down, they don't have anyone to work on it, so they come to the county and say, "Well, why don't you just run this for us?" This is just something that we are not equipped to handle. This is not a county function. This is the job for the water supply corporations. But Beebe also agreed that something needs to be done in the short term. Gerfers volunteered to talk to TCEQ about the challenges these communities are facing, getting rid of fines, and not getting some breathing room to fix problems locally. Portillo reminded the court that Candelaria is a community with dozens of young children, and someone needs to act to make sure they have safe water to bathe in and cook with. "This is the kind of thing you can't be on the fence about," he told the Sentinel. Illustration by Crow Crumbs. Few options available for substance abuse treatment in the Big Bend. By Sam Karras. Sam at BigBendSentinel.com. Far West Texas. Big Bend residents are no strangers to tackling problems posed by the physical isolation of their home turf. With no inpatient treatment or sober living options available within hundreds of miles, law enforcement, primary care physicians, and supportive community members have to fill in the gaps. Many suffer in silence, facing additional hurdles like social stigma and legal fallout from crimes committed under the influence. According to the National Institute of Mental Health, substance use disorder, SUD, is a treatable psychiatric illness. Diagnostic criteria, whether or not the patient is able to control their substance use, how severely their use impacts their personal and professional lives, whether they take significant safety risks to use their substance of choice, and if they have significant side effects if they stop using. According to statistics from the Rural Health Information, RHI, Hub, an initiative of the Federal Department of Health and Human Services, rates of substance abuse in remote communities are growing, outpacing urban areas in some categories, like the use of methamphetamines and tobacco. Though often perceived to be a problem of the inner city, substance use and misuse have long been prevalent in rural areas, their website explains. The RHI Hub has found that substance abuse in rural areas is correlated with low education attainment, poverty, unemployment, lack of access to health care, isolation, and a greater sense of stigma, all of which impact mental health. While the Big Bend is lucky to have relatively high graduation rates and a local university, the labor market in some pockets is suffering. Unemployment rates in Brewster and Jeff Davis counties are below average, but Presidio County's current stats hover around 5.7%, well above the national average of 3.9%. Social stigma, which can deter people from seeking treatment, is a much more abstract issue. In recent years, medical professionals have attempted to employ positive messaging and public education to help address these problems. The National Institute on Drug Abuse, NIDA, advises providers to use person-first language to emphasize that addiction is a medical issue rather than one of morality or self-control. Rather than using terms like tweaker or junkie. The recommended language describes a person with substance use disorder, centering the patient rather than their drug of choice and underlying mental health issues. But those in the know understand that words alone can't cover the significant gaps in care. In the Big Bend and other rural areas, primary care physicians are often the first, and sometimes the only, point of contact for people hoping to get sober. Adrian Billings, an expert at the Texas Tech University Health Sciences Center and former Big Bend clinician, said that the process is much different in remote areas. In larger urban cities, specialists such as psychiatrists or addiction specialists would take care of this problem, he explained. He said that some local providers might be able to prescribe Suboxone and other medications intended to help kickstart the rehabilitation process, but other resources are scant. There are few social workers and substance use disorder counselors available to provide a holistic blueprint for treatment. Apart from primary care providers, law enforcement are often the first to respond to addicts in crisis. Brewster County Sheriff Ronnie Dodson has seen these scenarios unfold too many times to count. While not every drug or alcohol-related crime is committed by a person with a substance use disorder, the two are often linked. Dodson said that there's little his department can do to help folks whose criminal record is tied to their addiction. Instead, they have to wait for the courts to sort things out. It's up to lawyers and judges to recommend or require treatment. The best he and his deputies can do is study de-escalation tactics. He said that the training only goes so far to prepare law enforcement for the stress of dealing with someone under the influence. You've got to calm them down, but sometimes it just doesn't work, he said. You just never can tell what's going to happen. If Dodson or a deputy arrests someone in active addiction, there are few local resources to help them sober up. He said that he'd had issues in the past with a lack of resources to help people detox from alcohol, the most life-threatening substance to detox from, and that many were left to suffer alone behind bars. With nearly 40 years of law enforcement experience, Dodson thinks the issue is more complex than meets the eye. The type of substances cops have to look out for has changed over the years. PCP was a huge problem when he was first starting out, but fentanyl has started to creep into the supply in Brewster County in recent months. Dodson doesn't believe that Brewster County is especially afflicted, but does think that these issues are only getting more severe. He speculates that rapidly changing environmental and social conditions are to blame. Mental health is a huge problem in the world right now, he said. Big Bend Regional Hospital District Executive Director J.D. Newsom has had his frustrations with the lack of a local safety net for people in active addiction. There's not a whole lot, and it's something we've really struggled with, he said. Some of it's systemic, and some of it's that we're in the middle of nowhere. Newsom gave the example of a disabled client who also abused alcohol, to the point that it was compounding his pre-existing health issues. To provide better care, he wanted to place the client in a medically supervised detox program so they could separate which health issues were related to his disability and which were related to his substance use disorder. The process was much more aggravating than he anticipated. The emergency room at the Big Bend Regional Medical Center did not have the resources to treat the client, so they referred him to a rehab facility where staff said they didn't have the experience to treat someone with such a severe disability. He was eventually referred to a hospital in El Paso that also declined to help. The client was eventually treated after he lost his housing, but the process was long and heartbreaking. He's alive and happy and healthy and so grateful for what we did, Newsom said. But the frustrating part was that there was a systemic failure to help this person. He thinks that part of the issue is that there isn't enough data to track how serious these issues are in the Big Bend, particularly in the region's remote, unincorporated areas. In a place like Terlingua, professionals may never get a true sense of scale. People go there to disappear, he said. We have no idea how significant of a problem it is. Maybe that's just the nature of where we live and the people who've been out here historically. Despite Terlingua's reputation as a rough and rowdy place, some locals dispute the idea that South Brewster County's addiction problems are more severe. One member of the Terlingua chapter of Alcoholics Anonymous, who wishes to remain unnamed, said that her community wasn't unique. It's not that people drink here more than anywhere else. People drink everywhere, she said. Alcoholics Anonymous, AA, is an organization aimed at providing support for people who want to become sober. Meetings are held around the world in dozens of languages and are even available online. The program provides a structure to help addicts find community and share their trials and tribulations with an understanding audience. This Terlingua AA member explained that the organization provides long-term support that medical treatment alone can't provide. A stint in rehab doesn't provide a blueprint for how a person struggling with addiction should live their life. It's not just withdrawal from alcohol. It is learning how to navigate the world sober, she explained. When I was drinking, the answer was always to get drunk, whether I was sad, I was mad, I was happy. Then suddenly you take alcohol away. How do I handle that? She acknowledged that it could be particularly intimidating for people in rural areas to start going to meetings where they likely already knew everyone. You are always welcome to come and sit down, she wanted to impart to anyone interested in attending. Whether you stay sober or drink, it's none of my business. I'm not the alcohol police. I'll still love you. South Brewster County meetings are held Thursday at 7:30 p.m., at the Big Bend Church in Study Butte. She wanted to emphasize that the meetings are not explicitly affiliated with the church and that anyone is welcome. You don't have to be sober to go to AA. You just have to have the desire. This story is part of a series on mental health in the Big Bend, funded by the Presidio County Community Foundation. Support options. PermiaCare. PermiaCare offers a number of services for people seeking help, from intensive inpatient care to outpatient support groups. Specific peer support groups are available for men, women, and youth. PermiaCare also offers a co-occurring psychiatric and substance use disorder, COPSD, program for folks whose substance use and other psychiatric conditions are entwined. For a free screening to determine which state-funded services are right for you, call 1-844-420-3964. More information and an online screening are available at permiacare.org/substance-use-disorder-services. Olivier, El Paso-based RVN offers a wide array of services from telehealth screenings, outpatient and inpatient clinics, and support groups. The organization has also been working with the Federal Rural Opioid Response Program in hopes of expanding their offerings to the greater Trans-Pecos region. For more information, visit alivane.org, that's alivane.org, or call 915-782-4000. An update on Marfa swim spots ahead of the summer season by Mary Cantrell. MKCANTRELL at BigBendSentinel.com. Marfa. Summer is fast approaching, signaling the start of the swimming season where many take to local pools for relief from the desert heat. While the town of Marfa has limited options for public swimming, some amenities are available with the City and Parks and Recreation Board working to open the pool and install a splash pad soon. MAC Pool. An opening date for the Marfa Activities Center, MAC Pool, is contingent upon hiring and training new lifeguards, City Manager Mandy Roan said. The city is seeking several lifeguards who must be at least 16 years of age and a pool manager who must be at least 18. Roan said three people, one to work the door and two shallow and deep-end lifeguards, are needed to work the pool at all times. She said the city would ideally like to have around six summer pool employees for rotation purposes, in case someone is sick or on vacation. All employees will be required to obtain their lifeguard certifications. The hourly rate for the pool manager is $15 an hour, and the hourly rate for lifeguards is $13 an hour. The deadline to apply is May 10th. At the most recent city council meeting, Roan said the city is putting ads in the paper and flyers up around town to spread the word so they can get lifeguards hired and the pool open sooner rather than later. We need to get it done so we can get lifeguard training scheduled so that we're not rushing and having to delay the opening of the pool to get them certified, Roan said. Open hours for the pool will also be contingent upon how many lifeguards the city can hire and their availability, she said. In a follow-up with the Big Bend Sentinel, Roan said repairs to the MAC's solar panels, which help power the facility, have been completed, and pool preparation will begin soon. Splash Pad. Marfa's Parks and Recreation Board is hard at work on a number of improvement projects for Cofield Park, including the installation of a splash pad. The splash pad will likely be activated by a button and will not have any standing water, meaning it will not require any lifeguards. It will be located north of the existing shade structure playground. Michael Camacho, Parks Board President, said they were still on track to have the splash pad installed this summer, but an exact timeline has not been determined. Marfa City Council recently voted to approve vendor Vortex Aquatic Structures, and now the Parks Board has a request for proposals, RFP, out to find someone who can install the structure. Camacho said there are no companies locally who can perform the work, so they will have to attract an outside contractor. The cost estimate for the new splash pad is $200,000, and it will be approximately 800 square feet. Construction on a new kitchen and bathroom adjacent to the park's existing gazebo, which was set to be done this spring, is still ongoing. Camacho said next steps are to pour concrete in the kitchen area, then bring in masons to construct the walls. Hotel St. George. The pool at the Hotel St. George is free for locals 21 and up after 4 p.m. Hotel guests have complimentary access, and non-guests can pay $30 for a day pass. Chef Jocelyn Gerrels is hosting a culinary pop-up starting at 4 p.m. Thursdays through Sundays, featuring noodles, dumplings, chicken wings, and more. Thunderbird. The Thunderbird Hotel pool is open to guests, and day passes are available to non-guests at the front desk from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. with limited availability. The pool is open until 9 p.m. The cost is $5 for children and $10 for adults. Children under 15 years of age must be accompanied by an adult. Photo courtesy of Michael Camacho. A rendering of the splash pad that will be installed in Cofield Park. Annual Voices from Both Sides Festival to be held in Lajitas this Saturday. By Sam Karras. Sam at BigBenSentinel.com. Lajitas. This year's annual Voices from Both Sides Festival will be held this coming Saturday, May 11th, at the Lajitas River Access Point, just west of the resort. The event, in which locals from the American and Mexican sides of the Rio Grande come together for a party in the river, has been going strong since 2012, with a brief hiatus for the pandemic. Voices from Both Sides is also locally known as the Fiesta Protesta, a playful way of pushing back against a militarized southern border. The informal Lajitas crossing was not policed until 9/11, cutting off the Mexican village of Paso Lajitas from food, fuel, and other necessities more easily accessible from the American side. This year's Voices will officially begin with the blessing around 10:30 a.m., and music will start around 11 a.m. and peter out around 6 p.m. Folks tailgate on both sides of the river, while local bands from the U.S. and Mexico trade the spotlight back and forth. Terlingua firefighter and guide Tony Drury, one of a handful of locals working to host the event, said that all are welcome to the party. Attendees should prepare for a hot day outside, bringing shade, plenty of water, and salty snacks to ensure a good time is had by all. He said that Voices emphasizes community camaraderie, banding together a community artificially separated by the border. It's about getting together to share our love for each other, our neighbors, and for the river, he said.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Fort Stockton Pioneer for Thursday, May 9th, 2024. Pecos County election results. The unofficial May 4th general election results, along with the early voting results, are in. These results will not be official until each entity canvasses their ballots. The early voting ballot board will meet Monday to canvass the three remaining mail-in ballots if they are received. On the ballot this election cycle were two Fort Stockton Independent School District Board Trustee seats, two Hospital District seats, two Water Improvement District seats, and the Red Bluff Water Control Power District. If in the Fort Stockton ISD Board of Trustees general election, Ward 4 was unopposed and Flo Garcia remained on the board. Ward 6 was a contested race with Ursula Sanchez as the incumbent running against Gabe Armendariz. Sanchez garnered 121 votes to Armendariz's 75. In the Pecos County Hospital District Precinct 4 was Santiago Cantu versus Deborah Teich. Teich totaled 61 to Cantu's 29. Luann Tovar ran unopposed in Precinct 2. In the Water District in Board of Directors search, residents in that district had the option to vote for none, 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5 candidates, including Delaine Cagle, Gary Bryant, Ernest Woodward, Angela Anhel, Michael McCulloch, Kathleen McCulloch, Ronald Cooper, and Kelly Garrett. The results are as follows. Cagle 6, Bryant 6, Woodard 6, Anhel 6, Cooper 6. The election board for the Red Bluff Water Control District director seat saw Shyler Wright versus Clarence Steffen. Steffen garnered 8 votes to Wright's 4. Celebrate dark skies in Far West Texas. Join McDonnell Observatory in celebrating dark skies May 7th through the 11th with special tours, science lectures, film screening, solar viewing, star parties, and more. In addition to our regular programming, the following special activities are offered. Residents of Brewster, Culverson, Jeff Davis, Hudspeth, Pecos, Reeves, and Presidio counties may reserve free passes for programs May 7th to 11th using the discount code BigBenSky. Thursday, May 9th, 12:30 p.m., Hobby Eberle Telescope Tour. Go behind the scenes at one of the largest world's largest telescopes. The special access tour of the Hobby Eberle Telescope is co-hosted by a member of the telescope's engineering staff and visits the telescope's dome floor. General admission to the visitor center is included. Duration is approximately 75 minutes. Transportation from the visitor center to the summit of Mount Locke is provided. 4 p.m., Dark Skies Talk, Ryan Cantrell, McDonnell Observatory, Visitor Center Program Specialist. 9 p.m., Astrophotography Workshop Part 2. Friday, May 10th, 4 p.m., Dark Skies for Studying Astronomy. Catherine Manea, University of Texas at Austin, Astronomy PhD student. 8:15 p.m., Dark Skies for Studying Our Galaxy, Keith Hawkins, University of Texas at Austin, Astronomy Professor. 9:30 p.m., Star Party. Saturday, May 11th, 12 p.m., Storytime with Amy Jackson, author of Cassandra and the Night Sky in the Exhibit Hall. 12:30 p.m., Otto Struve 82-inch Telescope Tour. Travel back in time to see the first telescope built at McDonnell Observatory. The 82-inch guided tour includes admission to the visitor center as well as a guided tour of the 82-inch Otto Struve telescope. Guests will visit the dome building and observing floor, learning about the history of the observatory and operation of the 82-inch telescope. Duration is approximately 75 minutes. The 82-inch telescope is not wheelchair accessible. Transportation from the visitor center to the summit of Mount Locke is provided. 4 p.m., Dark Skies for the Big Bend. Stephen Hummel, McDonnell Observatory Dark Skies Initiative Coordinator. 8:15 p.m., Documentary Film Screening, The Stars at Night. This screening is free. Passes with will be distributed first come, first served at the visitor center admissions desk before the screening. 9:30 p.m., Star Party. Learn more about the Dark Skies Initiative and efforts to preserve the night skies over McDonnell Observatory and how you can help. Special thanks to Apache Corporation for their support and partnership to preserve the night skies over Far West Texas and to create the Preserving Dark Skies exhibit at the McDonnell Observatory. Frank M. Bash, Visitor Center. Mountain lion regulations slated for vote May 23rd. Texas Parks and Wildlife Department is proposing a new ruling concerning mountain lions. This proposal is listed in the Texas Register, Volume 49, Number 6, mountain lions. Of the 16 states that are home to breeding population of mountain lions, Texas is the only state that does not currently regulate the hunting and trapping of the species. The commission pays attention to public comments, and they have the opportunity to comment online on the website, or they may contact Richard Heilbrun directly until 5 p.m. on May 22nd at 512-389-8104. There is a chance to comment in person on May 23rd, and each person will be allowed 3 minutes to comment before the proposal is voted on. Local photographer's childhood dream becomes a reality. Off the coast of the South American country of Ecuador lie the Galapagos Islands. They are a wildlife lover and coincidentally photographer's paradise. Lee Hoy has made his childhood dream of being a wildlife photographer come to life, having visited these islands more than 6 times since he embarked on the journey from dream to reality. If you've never had the opportunity to gaze upon one of his wildlife photographs, this is something that should be remedied post-haste. A native of Oklahoma, Hoy spent time in both Texas and Oklahoma growing up. He would spend time in Big Bend with his grandparents and vacations with his educator parents, immersed in nature and wildlife, and these experiences brought him full circle into what has developed into a busy, satisfying career in wildlife photography. He credits his start in photography to a book he picked up as a teenager by John Shaw entitled The Nature Photographer's Field Guide. Some of the more challenging moments in his career include shooting puffins on top of a cliff in the Faroe Islands with 40-plus mile-an-hour winds, being charged by an elephant in Africa, being chased by a bison, shooting a raining downpour in Alaska, shooting in Yellowstone in minus 45 degrees, close lightning bolts in Big Bend, and being bitten by an anaconda in the Amazon. Besides his photo workshops, Hoy submits occasionally to Texas Parks and Wildlife magazine, and he's a regular contributor to the Journal of Wildlife Photography. He leads classes and teaches for precision camera and video out of Austin and Houston, and he also has created a YouTube channel where he discusses the merits of the OM system, formerly Olympus, of which he is an ambassador, but his true love is being in the field and teaching others how to create stunning images. The one thing he hopes his students gain from his workshops are, or those who are just embarking into the world of photography, is not to be afraid of failure. If you want to be a great photographer, embrace the failure. You will learn more from that than from your successes. Celebrate your successes, sure, but learn from your failures and be willing to accept criticism and learn how to become better at your craft.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Monahans News for Thursday, May 2nd. Skills USA students return from state with medals. Esker Sega earns spot at Nationals. Monahans High School and Walker Junior High were well represented at the recent Skills USA State Skills and Leadership Championships held in Corpus Christi, April 3rd through 7th. Quote, "In an impressive display of skill and dedication, these young competitors demonstrated their prowess in various competitions spanning both technical trades and professional leadership arenas. Led by an exceptional group of students, the teams participated in a diverse array of contests, ranging from specific skilled trade areas to professional leadership events covering essential soft skills applicable across all occupations," CTE Director Scott Burkett said. The competition, which took place across several venues, including the American State Bank Center, Omni Hotel, Holiday Inn Marina Hotel, the Kraft Training Center, and the Del Mar College campuses of Corpus Christi, encompassed over 6,000 competitors and thousands of volunteers. High school contenders included Charisma Carrasco, April Chavez, Karima Garcia Johnson, Peyton Hall, Natalie Hernandez, Italy Martinez, Lucas McNeely, Morgan Simonton, and Severino Vidal. These students delved into competitions like early childhood education, career pathways showcase, job skill demonstrations, and related technical math, among others. Meanwhile, the junior high team, consisting of Bryson Hall, Jasmine Prospero, Alexa Chavez, Valkyrie Dodson, Juan Huerta, Mason Cedillo, Emily Tavares, Joanna Escasiga, Shonda Canales, and Imani Clark showcased their talents in areas such as job interview, prepared speech, and extemporaneous speaking, to name a few. WJH 8th grader Joanna Escasiga stands on the brink of national recognition as she prepares to compete in the National Leadership and Skills Conference from June 24th through 28th in Atlanta, Georgia. This prestigious event will see over 6,000 state champions vying for top honors in 115 skilled and leadership competitions. Joanna's qualifying contest is called Job Skill Demonstration. She is one of 54 students in the nation at this point. Quote, "We are extremely excited for Joanna and thankful for the dedication that she has given to better herself. Joanna's journey is a testament to her hard work and determination, and we are excited to see how she will fare against the nation's best," Burkett said. Monahan's volunteer fire department busy with pipeline explosion, frack fires last week. The story was written by Jan Cranfield. Members of the Monahan's volunteer fire department were busy toward the end of last week working multiple fire calls within the county. On Friday morning around 4:25 a.m., the Monahan's volunteer fire department responded to a pipeline explosion between Piute and Barstow in western Ward County. Two separate pipelines, one liquid gas and one natural gas, that joined at the same meter, exploded and sent flames into the air high enough to be seen in Odessa, south of Grand Falls, and from Jal, New Mexico. One line belonged to Atlas Energy and the other to Enterprise Energy. Quote, "The fire could not be controlled until the companies were able to shut the gas flow off at other points on the lines. Once the gas was shut in, firefighters from Barstow, Wickett, Monahans, and five firefighters from Odessa were able to get the fires under control," MVFD Fire Chief Randy Crabtree said. No injuries were reported. Along with the pipelines and the meter junction, an office trailer was lost in the fire. The location was close to I-20, mile marker 60, and south of the interstate. The firefighters were on the scene until approximately 1 p.m. Brian Merrill was driving east on I-20 at the moment the pipelines exploded. Merrill said that at first there was simply a glow on the horizon like an oil field flare, but that glow soon morphed into what he said looked like a sunrise and then into a mushroom cloud. Quote, "It was pretty unnerving," he said. "Then the fiery mushroom cloud burned out, only to be replaced by rolling flames that could be seen from 50-plus miles away." Driving down the interstate, Merrill said he and his friends could hear the roar of the fire as we drove past it over the sound of the wind and other vehicles, and the light from the fire had the intensity of a full moon on a clear night. Merrill works for a Bitcoin mining operation in the area. Before the pipeline explosion on Friday, firemen from Barstow, Piute, and Monahans also responded to an afternoon call at 2:15 p.m. last Thursday on a call with five semi-trucks and trailers on fire between Pecos and Barstow. Quote, "The trucks were near the service road at the I-20 mile marker 57, which was an oil field fracking location. the trucks were loaded with fracking equipment and supplies. The fire possibly started in the cab of one of the trucks and spread to the other four, Crabtree added. The MVFD was called back to the same location at 4:03 a.m. Friday morning, just before the pipeline explosion call, but the smoldering was extinguished before they arrived on the scene. Ward County Commissioner Eddie Nelms supplied three water hauler trucks to help fight the fires. North Side Road Repairs shuts down water. On Tuesday morning, several North Side residents found themselves without water for a few hours. The water was shut off by the City of Monahan's Water Department to initiate repairs on a main water valve. Quote, a line valve at Highway 18 North, Main Street, and North Carroll was damaged by the construction crew working on the highway project. This valve damage led to digging up the water line at the intersection of North Carroll and I Street to install a shutoff valve on the line at that point. The newly installed valve will allow the water to be shut off on the line leading out to the construction on the highway, which will let the city work crew repair the broken valve at that point, City Manager Rex Thee said. As of Tuesday afternoon, the water was back on for Northside residents. Quote, for the next 2 days, Wednesday and Thursday, we will be reading meters. On Friday, there may be brief periods of water shutdowns as we check valves on different water lines, he added. During next week, the repair will continue on the Highway 18 valve damage and will create periods of time when the water will be off. Quote, at this point, we won't know the exact days until we can coordinate with the highway construction crew, Thee said. Monday crashes results of drivers running stop signs. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. Two separate car accidents on Monday were because drivers disregarded stop signs at intersections, according to Monahan's Chief of Police Christopher Quintana, one of which resulted in a driver having injuries and the other caused a vehicle to crash into an apartment complex. The first crash happened around 7:40 a.m. at the intersection of East Sealy and East Monahan's Parkway. 18-year-old Allison Shiflett of Monahan's was driving a 2018 Nissan Murano northbound in the 100 block of East Monahan's Parkway when Claudia Kunath, age 54, of Las Cruces, New Mexico, was driving a 2013 Kia Optima and traveling eastbound in the 2000 block of East Sealy Street. Quote, while approaching the intersection, Shiflett failed to yield the right-of-way to Kunath and disregarded the stop sign. Kunath was unable to take evasive action and T-boned Shiflett's vehicle, Quintana said. Ward County EMS responded to the scene and transported individuals to the hospital to be treated for injuries. Kunath had a 16-year-old minor in the vehicle at the time of the crash. The second accident was reported in the intersection of 2nd and Calvin Streets. Miguel Baeza, age 47, of Monahans, was driving a 2013 Dodge Charger westbound near the intersection of 2nd and Calvin Streets, and Morgan Bean, age 30, of Monahans, was driving a 2004 Dodge Stratus southbound in the 100 block of South Calvin Street. Baeza failed to yield right-of-way to Bean and disregarded the stop sign at the intersection. Quote, the force of the crash forced Bean's vehicle into the grass of the Monahan's Housing Authority apartment complex and into the side of one of the apartments, which knocked several bricks out of the wall, Quintana said. It wasn't clear what other damage, if any, resulted from the crash or if the apartment was occupied at the time of the crash. Calls to the Housing Authority Executive Director, Ginger Carroll, went unanswered as of press time. Ward County EMS responded to the scene, but no one was transported to the hospital. Quote, drivers need to be more cautious when approaching intersections and obey all traffic signs and signals, Quintana added. Sales tax receipts remain flat. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. Monahan's sales tax receipts for April remain flat this month after being up and down for the last several months. Despite being slightly down this month, the April allocation was $414,000, which is $4,000 or 1% drop from last month, and was down considerably from March last year, dropping a little over 10%, $48,000. Quote, fortunately, sales tax is up 13 to 59% from the same time last fiscal year, City Manager Rex Thee said. Continuing the quote, to see sales tax up even slightly starting the second half of the fiscal year is exciting as the budgeting process begins for the next fiscal year, end quote. Receipts in the rest of the county were much of the same as Monahan's, with Thorntonville, Wickett, Pyote, and Grand Falls all showing a decline compared to March's receipts. Thorntonville and Wickett showed the biggest drop this month, and Pyote was the only community to have an increase from March 2023 receipts. Thorntonville collected $4,800 in revenues, a decrease of 32% over last month's allocation of $7,200. The community is back down for the year by 17%. Pyote received $18,500 compared to $23,800 in March, a dip of 22%. Despite the drop, receipts were still 94% more than this same time last year. Grand Falls is still down this month, collecting $13,700, a 10% drop from March receipts, and a 30% from last year's collections. Grand Falls remains down for the year by 19%. Wickett is still down this month, collecting $14,800, a decline of 27%. Wickett remains down 9% for the year. Receipts were mixed across the area, with Toya, Ira Ann, Odessa, Kermit, Wink, and Midland all posted a gain compared to last month, while Pecos, Fort Stockton, Balmoray, and Andrews all showed a drop over March's allocations. In Reeves County, Pecos posted a 17% drop this month, collecting $818,500 compared to last month's total of $995,700. However, the city is still up 9% over last March. After posting a huge gain last month, Balmoray is back down this month 55% over last month's totals. The community received $19,600 compared to $21,400 in March. Balmoray is down 55% compared to March 2023 collections and down 0.7% for the year. Toya was back up this month, collecting $2,500 compared to $738 last month, a decrease of 19%. The community is down over 82% for the year. In Winkler County, receipts for both Kermit and Wink were more than last month's receipts, although Kermit did show a huge increase compared to February's allocations. Kermit received $194,600, a 423% increase over last month's receipts of $37,100, and 2.5% less for the year. Wink was back up this month by 16% with $39,700 compared to $34,200 in March. Wink remained up for the year by 26%. In Pecos County, Fort Stockton received $296,300, down by 43% from last month's total of $527,700. For the year, Fort Stockton is still up 1.6%. Ira Ann showed an increase this month of 12%, collecting $32,800 compared to $29,100 last month. The community remains up 22% for the year. Crane was also down slightly from $71,800 last March to $62,600 this year, a decrease of 12%. In Midland County, the county was up 3% to $6.1 million compared to $5.9 million last March. The city is still down 4% compared to last fiscal year's collections. Andrews is still down this month, collecting $713,400 compared to $745,500 in March. The city is still down 4% compared to last March. Odessa was back up some this month, collecting $5.8 million compared to $5.1 million in March, a 1.8% increase. Despite the increase, the city remains down 1% for the year. Monahans, Andrews, Fort Stockton, and Ira Ann all assess a sales tax rate of 2%. Pecos, Crane, Balmoray, and Toya assess 1.5%. The City of Midland assesses 1.25%, and tax rate for Kermit and Wink is 1.0%. County rates for Midland and Winkler counties are 0.5%. These allocations are based on sales made in February by businesses that report tax monthly. Texas Comptroller Glenn Hager sent cities, counties, transit systems, and special purpose taxing districts $646 million in local sales tax allocations for the month of April, which is 5% more than in April of 2023.
Thank you for joining us for this week's edition of Far West Texas. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.